Please be seated and good morning. Great to see you all this morning. My book for the month of February is entitled Forgiveness and Other Acts of Love by Stephanie Dowrick. I have it on order and we'll have it in the bookstore hopefully sometime this week. It's a wonderful book because it talks about forgiveness, courage, fidelity, restraint, generosity, and tolerance. And this being the month of Valentine's Day, and you'll notice that we are decorated for Valentine's Day, and this being the month for the season for nonviolence, I thought it would be appropriate to use this book to go in and look at the various ways that we experience life coming from our hearts. So I'm talking this morning about courage. And the truth is that it takes courage. We may not label it as such, we may not recognize it as such, but it takes courage for us to deal with those things that we judge as big stuff. Our friend in Massachusetts that has been working with pancreatic cancer, many of you know the story, and the tumor is starting to grow again, so she's doing another kind of chemotherapy, and we continue to know the truth for her absolute perfect healing and that this is released with ease and grace. But it takes courage for her to continue to walk through it, as well as the people that love her to continue to hold her in the light and know the truth for her. It takes courage for us to walk through the end of a relationship or a change, a major change in a relationship, whether it's someone making their transition or the end of a marriage or a major change in a relationship with a family member or whatever it is. It takes courage for us to continue to do what we need to do and put one foot in front of the other. But there are other things in our lives that we may not judge as major that it takes, if you think about it, it takes courage to do. It takes courage to look at a job that no longer serves us and say, this doesn't work for me. Or when there's a conflict in our lives, to look at it and say, there's something we can do about this rather than running in the other direction. So this morning I'm going to be talking about the experience of courage in our lives, where it comes from, and how we can access it. So I'm glad you're here with me this morning. Our congregational song is Sacred Love. It's on page 2 in your song sheet.
Good, okay. You don't have to lead yourself to find courage. You can say that with me if you'd like. You don't have to go to any place outside yourself at all. Whatever courage you find within yourself, as you are bringing, am I in the right place? Yeah. To trust to the situation is already sufficient. But this can be discovered only through experience, not through contemplation. When your fears keep us timid or shamed, telling us that courage is for special people only and not for you, and for me, it is exhilarating to defy that message, finding that strength and perhaps the will also to be courageous on our own behalf, as well as on the behalf of others, is crucial to self-love and to an understanding of what love is. Love and courage are available in an abundance that is beyond the limits of our minds, even to imagine. So let's turn within right now and get in touch with the experience of love, of a divine love that moves through us as us. And think about that possibility of dwelling in love always. Sometimes we have to remind ourselves. We have to look at something that takes a little extra something from us to see love, to feel love. But to the best of our ability, making love a primary focus of our lives. Wherever we are, whatever the situation, feel the love within. And then it will flow through you. And what you see, what you hear, what you speak, in all of life, you'll see the loveliness. Let's make that our commitment for now. To make love that, since God is love, you know, this is just wonderful. Look at all the wonderfulness that you'll see and be and experience. And your life will just be so much deeper. And so with love in our hearts, and love in our speech, and love in our actions, we say thank you, God. Amen.
Whenever I think of the word courage, I always think of the Wizard of Oz, and I think of the Cowardly Lion. So if we're talking about courage today, the topic has to be the Lion's Journey to Oz. And you remember the movie, and it was so much fun, and you remember the witch, and you remember all of those things, and it was an amazing, metaphysical, oneness, powerful message that I never got until, which we don't get until we're in this teaching, because, you know, gee, it's a great story, and isn't that fun, and she got to go home. But remember when they all went to Oz, the wizard said, everything you're looking for, everything you've journeyed for, everything you were searching for outside yourself was always within you. That Dorothy always had the power and the opportunity to go home. Home not being a destination to someplace far away, home being the realization that the presence of spirit is within us. But you didn't have to go someplace to get it. It was always that journey back into our hearts, into ourselves, where the presence of spirit resides. No talk about courage would be complete without the Cowardly Lion.
Courage. What makes a king out of a slave? Courage. What makes the flag on the mast to wave? What makes the elephant charge his tusk in the misty mist or the dusky dusk? What makes the muskrat guard his musk? Courage. What makes the Sphinx the seventh wonder? Courage. What makes the dawn come up like thunder?
Such a great movie. My book, Forgiveness and Other Acts of Love, by Stephanie Dowrick. She says it takes courage to wake up to how mysterious and profound life is, and to not avoid, deny, scorn, repress, or contain what doesn't easily fit into our worldview. To know how wrong we can be and allow our minds to be changed as well as broadened. If nothing changed, if everyone did what we wanted them to do, if everyone just took our advice, life would be so much easier and we could just go along. But the good news is it doesn't work like that. I don't know if that's been your experience, but my experience has been that more often than not, people don't do what we want them to do. They don't live like we want them to live. They don't cooperate with us, and our circumstances out there shift and change, And we have the opportunity to either look for help, assistance, ways to block it out outside of ourselves, or go within for that courage so that we can keep doing what needs to be done. And when we do, we find the most amazing presence of spirit within us. We find that life, with a capital L, is always for us, and life in our human experience with one another becomes so loving and so supportive. But we've got to stand and say what our truth is, and I'm going to talk about all of that and more in just a few minutes. Stephanie goes on to say that finding that strength and perhaps the will also to be courageous on our own behalf, as well as on behalf of others, is crucial to self-love. Change is, by and large, scary. Change to a new job, change to a new relationship, ending of another relationship, whatever it is, because we knew what it was before. We may not have liked it. If you've ever been in a situation where you had a job or a relationship or a health situation or an experience in your finances or just whatever that really didn't work for you, but you kind of felt you were comfortable in your discomfort, I've had that, and I've gone along with that, and I know of one specific example where I went along for a really long time, and I won't go with the story because I've told it as not ad nauseum, but it reaches a point often when the universe says, for God's sake, let me help you with that. And we get, you know, with the universe and thinking of spirit or God or the universe or your higher power or whatever you choose to call this loving, nurturing experience, with a smile on its face says, you know, this so doesn't work for you. Let me help you. And sometimes we get the cosmic nudge, and sometimes we get the cosmic 2x4. If you've ever had that experience, you know how that goes. But what it's doing is it is knowing, we are knowing the best for us, although sometimes we know it, but we don't want to take the actions to make it happen. But the universe always knows that and allows us to move forward. And what happens when we get that nudge is we never get the nudge off a cliff. The nudge always comes into a new, the most amazing new experience, even though we can't always see it at the time. And it's always wonderful. If you're on my email list, and hopefully you had the opportunity to read my email from Monday, talking about the word wow, starting with the W for wonderful. And I said wonder-full because our experiences, when we allow them to be, can be full of wonder because we're looking to see what good is there in this for me. What lesson do I have the opportunity to learn? What can I look at and forgive so that I can move forward? But it often takes that courage to look at it and say, there's something more. If you were with me last week, we talked about not judging by appearances and seeing that there's always something more than what's at face value. It's so important for us to look at that. It's important for us to face the fear and do it anyway, to do what needs to be done and to keep walking. And so I'm going to talk a little about those experiences this morning. It takes courage to speak our truth. And what I'm finding in this teaching as I go through and clean out those old beliefs about everything related to life and God and money and relationships and all of that, and you know, it's like when we go through our beliefs, it's like forgiveness in that you could relate it to being an onion, that you peel away one layer of the onion and you might think, oh good, I'm done with that, I'd never have to do that again. And then something happens that triggers another opportunity for the next layer of the onion to go. and the next layer of the onion to go. But it's so important for us to recognize what we believe in our heart of hearts and not allow ourselves to believe somebody else's belief. On Wednesday night, we're doing a Prosperity Plus workshop with Mary Manon Morrissey, not her physically, but we have her on DVD. And it's a tremendous course. And this last Wednesday night, one of the things she was talking about was her experience being in the hospital at a very young age with liver failure. And this was back in the day before they really did transplants. And so they were going to go in and take out a portion, and the other portion might or might not have been okay. And so this woman came in and sat down and talked with her. This woman who no question it was her angel being there. And this woman said, well, can you believe that it's possible for this to be healed before tomorrow morning when you go in for surgery? And Mary said, no, I just can't, at that time, she was not in a place where she could believe that. And the woman said, well, then can you believe that it's possible for the surgery to happen and you be completely healed as a result, for all of the cause of this illness to be removed when this portion of your liver, is it a liver or a kidney?
Kidney.
Oh, I'm sorry. All right. So one of the kidneys. It's down there somewhere. Anyway, the point is, can you believe that when that kidney is removed, you will be healthy? And she thought for a minute and said, yeah, I think I can probably believe that. And so she was. They took out the diseased kidney. She went home. She recovered. It's now 40, 50 years later, and she's out doing what she was doing, and she was completely healed. The point is, it's important for us to not believe what the doctors say. How often do we go and get the prognosis, and we take that as the truth, that the doctor somehow knows more about our bodies than we do, that we give our power away to an expert, quote, end of quote, rather than recognizing the truth of us. It's important for us to know what we believe, and sometimes we need someone to believe for us. That's why we have ministers and practitioners here at the church to help you, to work with you, to believe for you that whatever the situation in your life is, it can be healed. We can find the new job. You can experience abundance and physical healing and whatever it is. We can believe for you. So it's important for us to recognize that we can believe what we believe and then speak our truth. In the fear about the economy, in the fear about just whatever it is out there, it's easy sometimes to get caught into that vacuum of fear and anger and those politicians and the economy and just all the rest of that. And it's so important for us to recognize that that's not our truth. It does not have to be our experience. People are still selling houses. People are still finding jobs. People are still doing what they're doing. And this noise, this background noise that we have the opportunity to either choose as our truth or not, doesn't have to be. We can just go on because the economy is the roller coaster ride. And it goes down and it comes up and it goes down and so on and so on and so on. But our ride can be full of ease and grace because that's the truth of us. So it's important for us to speak our truth. But sometimes it takes courage to do that. It takes courage to forgive. This is the other F-bomb. You know the other F-bomb, and if you don't know the other F-bomb, I'll tell you after service when I'm not being recorded. But I bet you do. Sometimes it's very easy to respond in kind. When you're having a conversation with someone and there's anger and resentment and bitterness and hostility and judgment, it is easier to respond in kind. But I can have peace instead of this. The truth is, even if we respond in kind, and that felt really good for a couple of minutes, and then I just want to go brush my teeth and get that taste, because doesn't it, when you've really, you may be absolutely, you are totally justified in cussing them out. And then what have you got? You've not resolved that bitterness. You've not resolved that situation. Forgiveness allows us to look at everything, to look at our part of the experience, their part of the experience, and say everyone did the best they could, because if they could have done better, they would have. And oh, by the way, I did the best I could too. It feels so much better, but forgiveness is not for wusses. Forgiveness is for us who look at this and say, this is going to continue until I let this go. And many of you have heard the story of my situation with my ex-wife and her taking my son and being gone for months and I didn't know where they were, and then suing me for child support for the time that she was gone and I didn't know where she was, and all of this, and I just carried that in my backpack and would talk to anybody who would stand still enough to listen, because that was my story, that was my rock that I was holding on to. And I just got some wonderful, oh my God, I can't believe she did that to you. And it just was that pity party that I carried with me in the trunk of my car was just so wonderful. And my life so wasn't working. And my relationship so wasn't working. And ultimately, I got the message that maybe it was time to release it. And forgiveness is the greatest thing, because it's not an event. We don't sit down and say, oh, okay, here's my list, I'm going to forgive today, and then tear up the list. We're done with that, peeled away that piece of the onion, now we're done. It is absolutely the onion, because when you do it, then there's always someone else to forgive. There's always, and oftentimes, it takes more than one experience of forgiving someone to really get into that heart-centered space where the forgiveness has happened. This is not an off the top of your head thing. This is a, in my heart, I am choosing to forgive. What happened for me was, one day out of the blue, the still small voice said, she did the best she could. And oh, by the way, so did you. And it was done. Forgiveness is the most selfish thing, and selfish being a very good word. It's the most selfish thing. It's the best thing we can do for ourselves. Better than a new car, better than a new house, better than a diamond ring. It's the best gift that we can do for ourselves. And it is totally, even though this is not logical, they don't deserve to be forgiven. Well, maybe they don't. Doesn't matter. You're not doing it for them, you're doing it for yourself. Because 9,999 times out of 10,000, the person we're forgiving doesn't give a fig whether we've forgiven them or not. My ex-wife is not losing any sleep over whether or not I've forgiven her. It's the greatest gift that we can give ourselves, because it allows us to move on. Sometimes it takes courage to do that. I don't want to look at that again. I'm going through a process in my life where there's some stuff that I got to go in and clean out. I don't want to do that. But until we do, we keep it with us. And what happens is we keep drawing experiences that look different, smell different, taste different, act different, but ultimately are really still the same to us again. Until we release, until we forgive. So the courage that it takes to forgive is so worth it. It's so worth it. It takes courage to forgive ourselves as well as others in the recognition that at some level, and we might not have woken up one morning consciously and said, gee, I'm going to create this wonderful calamity in my life. But at some level, we had responsibility. The good news is when we allow ourselves to recognize that we had at least partial responsibility for whatever it was, we can forgive ourselves and move forward. If it's somebody else's fault and we're totally in victimhood, what can you do if somebody else is driving the car? Nothing. You sit in the driver's seat or the passenger seat and you go along and the car goes where it goes. If we recognize that we are either in the driver's seat or at least operating the gear shift, we can pull it over to the side of the road and stop it, or at least put it in neutral and get the thing to slow down and stop. So when we allow ourselves to recognize that we were at least partially involved, we forgive them, we forgive ourselves, and we can move forward, because victimhood does nothing for us. It takes courage to be here on Sunday mornings in this teaching. And I don't think we honor ourselves for that enough. Religious science, New Thought, science of mind, whatever you choose to call it, reminds us that we are one with God, that we are creators. Jesus said, "It is done unto you as you believe." So in our lives, we have the opportunity to create whatever it is. And if there's some area of our lives that's not working, we have the opportunity to look at it, change our beliefs, and move forward in the experience that we choose to have. But there are other teachings that don't require that level of responsibility. There are other teachings that have a savior, and we're just here until the sweet by and by, and then it'll all be better because we'll be saved. But we know that Jesus was the great example, not the great exception. We don't have to wait for the sweet by and by. But it takes courage to do that. It takes courage to say, I was partially responsible for this mess, and I can change it. It takes courage to do that. It takes courage to be open to new ideas and assistance and to ask. Life, as I was talking about earlier, life is for us. The universe, God, Spirit, our higher power, is with us, in us, as us, and is there for us with what we need to know when we ask. But how often do we get into a situation and judge it by its appearances and say, oh God, how am I going to do this? But stay in the, oh God, how am I going to do this in our minds, rather than dropping down into our hearts and allowing Spirit to tell us how we're going to do this. We never walk alone. We're always told what we need to know when we need to know it, and so we need to ask for that assistance from Spirit as well as from dear ones in our lives, from ministers and practitioners, whoever gives you spiritual support. That help is there for us, but sometimes we don't take advantage of it. Sometimes it takes courage to say, and in this teaching, you know, you're supposed to be, everything's supposed to work. Your money situation is supposed to be fine. Your health is supposed to be fine. Your relationships are supposed to be fine. And what I want to tell you is anytime your ego starts to say, you're not supposed to, or you're supposed to, just stop it. Because that's judgment. We go through our stuff, and if you don't have any stuff to go through, I salute you. But the rest of us have stuff to go through. And the good news is, life is never boring, because once you get done with that stuff, there's more stuff. And it's a wonderful thing, because it allows us to see how far we've come, to see where the opportunity is to recognize the blessing and move forward. But sometimes we need help. And we need to ask for help and know that it's there for us, because the truth is, it is from Spirit as well from the dear ones in our lives. It takes courage to make the change, to move from lack into abundance, to move from dis-ease into perfect health, to move from a relationship that no longer serves us into one that does. It takes courage to change whatever that is. But we have the tools to do that. Unlike the cowardly lion who took the long trip, we don't have to take a trip because everything we need to know, that recognition of our oneness with spirit, is within us, and we can do that, whatever it is. It takes courage to come with an attitude of nonviolence, and I'm going to talk about the season for nonviolence in just a few minutes. But it takes courage to come with an attitude of nonviolence to ourselves. I remember when my son was 12 or 13, and he was down for the weekend with Jerry and me, and it was time for that talk. If you've had children or grandchildren, you know, ultimately, you have to have that talk. And I don't think he brought up the subject. I think we brought up the subject and said, is there anything we need to talk about? And he said, no, I'm okay. And I said, what I want to tell you, Brandon, the only thing you must do is take care of yourself. When our children, before they do whatever it is they're going to do, when they recognize, is this honoring me? Is this doing whatever I'm doing honoring me, really? Is what I'm getting ready to do that will get me through this very difficult moment or will allow me to escape from this pain for a little while or whatever it is it really honoring me? When we love ourselves so much that we would not put ourselves through that whatever it is. You know, there's a lady walking down the street with a purse, and I could just go grab that purse, and she's probably got a few $100s and we could go have a great time. But that choice does not honor me. The consequences of that action do not honor me. And when we get to the point of looking at, as we're preparing to do whatever it is, but we have that split second, that holy instant between the thought and the action, is what I'm getting ready to do going to honor me? The world changes. The world absolutely changes. And please know with me that our children and our grandchildren know of their incredible value and love themselves enough to not do that. To know that spirit is their source, that they don't need to go outside themselves for peace or for joy or for happiness. Because when you go outside yourself for whatever it is, it's a momentary situation. The ashtray in the new car gets full of gum wrappers. The new car smell, and you got a while to go, so you're good. But ultimately, the car gets full of gum wrappers. The ashtray gets full of gum wrappers. The new car smell wears off. And then what do? You go on vacation so that it'll make you happy and bring you joy. But ultimately, you got to come back. It's got to be within us. And it takes courage sometimes to remember that whatever I'm doing, the shopping trip to Macy's ultimately will result in a credit card bill. And we have buyer's remorse or eater's remorse or whatever it is remorse. Because it was looking outside ourselves for whatever that was that's not bringing us the lasting experience that we're looking for. But we come with an attitude of nonviolence to ourselves because when we start to go down that road, and even if we go to the end and who ate all the chocolate ice cream? It was not me. Well, not all. You had help. But ultimately, when we do that, we come to ourselves with love and forgiveness. And rather than beating ourselves up, we say, ah. That's what happened yesterday. What lessons can I learn from it, and how can I move forward so that I don't do that again, if that's an experience we don't wish to repeat? So an attitude of nonviolence to ourselves as well as to others. Jerry was doing a paper for, and I don't even remember the course that you were doing, but it was several years ago, and it talked about the concept of fight or flight. And back in the day when dinosaurs and saber-toothed tigers and all the rest of them roamed the earth, you had the choice. Oftentimes there was the choice if you were out looking for lunch, there was the possibility that you could become lunch because of the saber-toothed tigers and all of those creatures that were out there. So if you're walking through the woods or the jungle or whatever and you hear the snap of a twig behind you, your mind says, is it something that I can turn around and fight, or should I run? And so within us is the fight or flight experience. And the problem is that sometimes we carry that fight or flight experience with us into present day, into our experiences with one another, and in the line at the grocery store, and on the phone with the ticket agent for the airlines, and just all the rest of that, and either fight with them or screw this and hang up the phone or run out the door or whatever. There are other options when we come with an attitude of nonviolence. It takes courage to not fight, not flight, but instead stand in our truth and stand up for what we believe in. In a season for nonviolence, this is an annual remembrance of January 30th to April 4th, honoring the lives and nonviolent principles of Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., and Cesar Chavez. And nonviolence sounds at first like passive or inactive, but that's not the truth. Nonviolence is not passive or inactive. It is actively saying, I'm not going to respond in kind. And the three men that this season honors, first one being Martin Luther King, and all of you, I'm sure all of you are familiar with him at least a little bit. And I love this quote from his I Have a Dream speech. There is something that I must say to my people who stand on the warm threshold which leads into the palace of justice. In the process of gaining our rightful place, we must not be guilty of wrongful deeds. Let us not seek to satisfy our thirst for freedom by drinking from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We must forever conduct our struggle on the high plane of dignity and discipline. We must not allow our creative protest to degenerate into physical violence. Again and again, we must rise to the majestic heights of meeting physical force with soul force. Because the truth is, if you meet someone who is combative with combat, and sometimes it's a punch in the nose, and sometimes it's verbal abuse back and forth or whatever, when we meet in kind, there's no end. When we meet nonviolently and choose to sit down and discuss it and come to an agreement, or sit down and discuss it and agree to disagree, which is a concept, we don't always have to beat someone into submission so that they agree with us, and not necessarily physically, but also verbally. People don't have to agree with us, and it's okay. But when we meet them in a nonviolent way, it just goes so much better and feels so much better. Mahatma Gandhi, and you may know the story of him as well, in India in the 1930s, he and his followers adopted a strategy of refusing to cooperate with British rule. And I know this, you may remember the story of the salt tax. The British government was trying to generate revenue and so salt being a necessary element for the human body, the British government chose to put a tax on salt. And Gandhi led and They had to buy it. They had to pay for it. They could not get salt from any other source. And he led a group of people on quite a long walk. I forget how long it was, but it was several days down to the ocean to get salt, to get water, salt water from the ocean. And they were met along the way with violence and anger and all the rest of that, and they did not respond in kind. And ultimately, through civil disobedience and boycotts, they loosened their oppressor's grip on power and set India on the path to freedom. Because how can you, if you go in guns blazing and someone's sitting there, are you really going to shoot him? They didn't. And that's and it came to an end, and they were able to move forward so much quicker and so much easier and so with so much less bloodshed than if they'd responded in kind. And then finally, Cesar Chavez, and if you've been in California for some time, you may remember the name, if not the experience as well. But he led the first successful farm workers union in American history, achieving dignity, respect, fair wages, medical coverage, pension benefits, and humane living conditions, as well as countless other rights and protections for hundreds of thousands of farm workers. Sometimes we start to think, oh, well, they're just the people that work in the fields. Are you having a salad with dinner tonight? Are you going to steam some broccoli? You can have strawberries in a couple of months? All that would not be on your table were it not for these people that are out there doing that work to harvest it and bring it to us. And Cesar Chavez said, we have our own bodies and spirits and the justice of our cause as our weapons. When we are really honest with ourselves, we must admit that our lives are all that really belong to us. So it is how we use our lives that determine what kind of men we really are. It is my deepest belief that only by giving of our lives do we find life. I am convinced that the truest act of courage, the strongest act of manliness, is to sacrifice ourselves for others in a totally nonviolent struggle for justice. So in the book, Stephanie Dowrick says, paying close attention to what is true and learning to distinguish it from what one might wish were true develops trust. And I'd like to continue with that quote very quickly. Going on, she says, such trust, offering it, being worthy of it, is a crucially important aspect of loving, of taking other people seriously, and of not using them simply as stepping stones on whatever your current individual route might be. But this is not the glamorous side of courage. There are no medals, no parades, no promotions for taking responsibility for your own life. The interior rewards, however, are great. Not just great, but tremendous, because they keep you in faithful, knowledgeable contact with yourself. So I invite us this morning to think about what's going on in your life. And if everything works or if everything's okay, it's okay. But the universe always says yes to us. I'm reminded of the quote from Edwin Gaines' book, The Four Spiritual Laws of Prosperity. She talks about like being sitting in the car with the engine running and saying, God, use me. I'm here. I'll do whatever you want me to. And God responded by saying, Edwin, I'm here. I'm ready. Use me however you want me to. The truth is that this loving, nurturing presence is there for us and always responds to us when we're conscious as well as when we're unconscious. We're always creating something. And sometimes what we've chosen to create, what we know in our heart of hearts we came here to do, I don't want to do it. It's going to hurt. It's going to be painful. It's going to make me look at stuff I don't want to look at. It's going to take me out of my comfort zone. But that's what we came here to do. We came here to play with the big kids. We didn't come here to settle. It takes courage, but that courage is always within us. So with that in mind, let's move into the light. So in this moment, we recognize that there is only one power, presence, and intelligence, and that is God. That is the universe, spirit, our higher power. That is the loving, nurturing presence that we are the essence, experience, and expression of. And we choose to know consciously and feel in this moment that all that is necessary resides within us. All the peace, all the joy, all the love, all the light, all the courage resides within us so that we can look at the situation in our lives and choose to heal it, choose to experience something new, something greater than we've ever had before, a healing like we've never had before, and know that the universe always supports us in doing this. And because of that, we move forward, knowing that we are spiritual beings having a human experience, and we choose to be consciously aware of that, to be always aware of our spiritual being status. And if you've come with anything on your heart this morning that you're ready to heal, ready to release, we wrap that in light and love and peace, and allow it to be healed for you in this moment and to be replaced with the perfect love that resides within you. It is the truth of your being and of my being, and that is our experience now and today like never before. We give great thanks for this place we call Joyful Living Church, for this opportunity to come together this morning. And together we say, and so it is.